Good morning and welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 12th of July. It is our panel discussion for our first hour, and we look forward to having you be a part of it. All you have to do that is email us at roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page, or you can even tweet us. We hear all the kids are doing that now.
A lot of tweeting going on.
And you can tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Our panel this morning, newsman Ray Graff, who was just tweeting.
Yeah.
Yes. And joining us from an undisclosed location, Alan Chardock.
The very same. Who will carry the mail to Red Gulch?
You will.
And who may you be?
I forgot my coffee, so I'm going to just let you know later on that.
Do you want us to do...
You're Red Ryder.
Oh, that's right. I'm Red Ryder, and you are the Purple Sage.
And I say, of the Purple Sage, and you say...
Father.
The very same.
The very same.
And then I say, Father, and you say, Son.
Right. And then we say, da-da-da-da-da.
And you're saying, da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Right. Okay. Got you now.
I can't believe you didn't know that.
I forgot. I told you. I forgot my coffee. Well,
can you go get some?
I'll get some in a little while.
We can handle it.
We'll send a couple interns over.
All right. There you go.
Oh, we don't have any interns today. Oh, well.
Yes, we do.
We're fine.
It being Friday.
That's right. Good morning. We have some very interesting issues to talk about. First and foremost, you know, we started off the week, the big news story being about Eliot Spitzer once again into politics, and it was just a formality then to go out and to get the signatures that you needed, and from the reports we hear this morning, he has the signatures more than enough, Alan, right?
That's right. In New York State politics, the game is played lethally. You get the signatures, but you have to get at least three times as many as you need because your opponents send their people. I once did it for a state senator years and years ago. You walk, and it was really an eye-opener. I was a kid, but you walk over there to the Board of Elections, and you examine the signatures, and you compare them to the registrations. And if somebody leaves out their middle initial or puts in a wrong, address or anything like that, you kick them right off. And so you need twice as many, two or three times as many. The interesting question, of course, is that since the Democratic organization wants Scott Stringer, who's a good guy, by the way, to win, they collect the signatures for him and with him, whereas Spitzer had to do it the old-fashioned way, which is pay for it. And he did it, and he did it well, and it just shows what he can do when he puts his mind to any of this stuff. Remember, he was quite a fighting attorney general and went after Wall Street, and they're after him now, too. They don't want to see him back either.
And so how much power ultimately are they going to have over something like this, over of an office that, flew below the radar until the former governor decided he was going to run for it?
Well, you know, that was exactly what happened with the attorney general's job when he moved up to it. A lot of people didn't think it was going to mean anything. He turned it around. He started doing things that the federal government wasn't doing. He embarrassed the SEC and everybody else, and he turned it into a very powerful office. Now, you know, the thing about the comptroller's job is that the comptroller gets to vote the shares in the retirement fund,
right.
And we're talking about billions and billions and billions of dollars. And if he starts to go after individual corporations that are not meeting their obligations or doing their duty, you better believe that he can have an awful lot of power. He's a bright guy, and he'll know what to do with it. And I did one other thing, and that is, I truly think, guys, that these people are thinking that they don't want him there, and they'll do anything they can not to. So look for them to put a Republican up against him of some stature. If they can do that, I'll bet they'll do it.
Can you think of a Republican who would do it?
Mark Sanford.
That's funny, Ray.
Thank you very much.
No, I don't. No, I'm just saying they'll do anything they can not to see Eliot Spitzer rise. I don't even know if it's too late, to be honest with you. But whatever they can do, they'll do. They just think this guy is poison. He goes after everybody, and they don't like him.
37 3,750 signatures is what you need. 3,750 valid signatures.
So we got eight times
that.
To get
on the ballot.
More than
eight. He received over 27,000 signatures that were submitted to the City Board of Elections just after 10:30 last night. And to your point, Alan, there was a midnight deadline to get the petitions in, so he beat it by an hour and a half. And then then we go into the challenge phase, which Alan was talking about, where Spitzer's opponents or others could challenge the signatures for reasons such as the incomplete address or the missing dates, and then the election officials would have to review the objections and hold a hearing and dot dot dot. But I assume that's the reason that you get 27,000 as opposed to 5,000, so you can have plenty to fill in the blanks.
Well, you say election officials. That's interesting, because those election officials are the regular party guys who don't want to see him there. Now, the other question is, I just heard on our news this morning, I would like to know how many petitions Scott Stringer put in there. Because if in fact, I know I got his name wrong, but if you know, Spitzer wanted to, he could play the same game with them.
Yeah.
He could go in there and challenge petitions.
Well, and that is the game, right? I mean, that is usually how it goes back and forth, right?
It's not nice. It's not nice. It's not it's not democracy. You know, democracy is, if somebody wants to run, in most states, they get a chance to run. You don't set up all these roadblocks so that the fat cat party boys can put a stop to it if they want to. And that is, and you know, almost everybody who's in the legislature sooner or later or runs for governor has faced this sometime in their career. It's New York politics with a vengeance.
It's one of the things I think this is interesting of, and we talked about this on Monday when he announced, but he basically, by announcing on Monday, gave himself 4 days to figure this out. He was originally saying, well, hopefully I can get 7,000, 8,000 signatures. He ended up with a lot more than that, but to give yourself a 4-day window,
yeah,
you got to be a little confident.
Or have planned it for a while,
and,
too.
And have a lot of money. Right, $12 an hour to collect the signatures.
Yeah, I think he was paying $850 a day, I read somewhere.
Well, they said that was inaccurate.
Inaccurate.
According to the campaign, they paid $12 an hour to collect signatures. And
hey, I like some of that.
How many people?
It does not say.
Okay.
Does not
that
say.
Would be the key,
yeah,
right?
But there was a lot. And not only that, but he gave a party, a signing party. That was very clever, I thought.
Yeah, we weren't invited to that.
You want a hot dog? What'd you say?
I said we weren't invited to the signing party.
You don't live in New York City.
We can get there on the train. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about other issues, including the Farm Bill and what's up with that. We will continue our conversation. We always welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Ray is tweeting now. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from The Cheese Traveler, Albany, New York, a purveyor of over 100 handcrafted cheeses and pantry items featuring Tilldale Farm, fresh grass-fed beef and pasture pork, thecheesetraveler.com. The Green River Festival, Greenfield, Massachusetts, a 2-day, 3-stage music festival with hot air balloon rides, July 20th and 21st, greenriverfestival.com. And Middletown Medical, with walk-in urgent care centers in Middletown and Ellenville for the treatment of injuries and illness, minimal wait times, evening and weekend hours, middletownmedical.com for insurance providers.
Ray's rocking out here
in
the studio.
Oh, yeah.
You're
it's
missing
a
it, Alan. Welcome back.
No, when Ray moves, he really moves.
Yes, he does.
All right.
Yeah. Oh. Mm-hmm. I've seen him dance. He's quite something.
All right, sir.
All right. It is just fill in the space. All right. Well, welcome back to the panel. We have our next item up for bids, or as we call it, our next story to discuss. And that is the ongoing saga of the Farm Bill. House Republicans have put through a pared-back agriculture bill through the House on Thursday. And, you know, it was just too big to fit through the door. So what do you take out of it? Well, you take out the food stamp program. That ultimately made conservatives happy, but obviously in the process lost what little Democratic support the bill had in the first place when it failed last month. It was the first time food stamps had not been a part of the Farm Bill since 1973. It was a 216-208 vote, which saved House Republican leaders from an embarrassing reprisal of the unexpected defeat of a broader version of the bill in June. However, the future of agriculture policy remains uncertain. The food stamp program, formerly called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, was 80% of the original bill's cost. It remains the centerpiece of the Senate's bipartisan farm bill. Alan, when are these kids going to get along with each other?
Well, it's more than that, you know, when you think about it, Joe. I mean, there are a lot of Americans who cannot put food on the table. And these food stamps help a lot of people. So what happens is that this has become a favorite whipping post for the Republicans, because they say, you know, why should they have free food and the rest of it? That is really what is wreaking havoc in this country. The idea that we can't help each other and that some child will go hungry because we can't put food stamps on the table. Now, that doesn't mean that there haven't been issues with the food stamp program, that it hasn't had to be tweaked and the rest. But in the end, this is one more piece of lousy politics trying to cater to the right-wing Tea Party-type Republicans, and it passed. So from my position, you know, it really is bad. I went to the barber the other day, Joe, and this kid who was cutting my hair, I'm not going to say where, annoyed me. He said that Obama was giving a free cell phone to anybody who wanted one, who is poor, and also giving a free car. Can you believe this stuff? This is the kind of stuff they're putting out there all the time. And they do the same thing with things like, you know, putting enough vegetables and food on the table for our kids. It's lousy. You know, in Massachusetts, there a bunch of legislators are trying to live on the little bit of money that is allowed. And they call that the SNAP program, and it's very hard to do. It's very hard to do indeed. We all know that.
And you could have said something to the kid, but he had scissors in his hand.
Right. You don't want to argue with the kid with the scissors. That's a good point.
You don't cause any problems.
Well, as you know, I tend to
argue anyway.
Things.
Yeah.
And I did that day. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that why your hair is especially short?
Yeah. That's why he has a mohawk now, oddly enough. It's an interesting mohawk.
I look a little like Calvin of Calvin and Hobbes. Yeah. Remember his haircut?
Yeah, sure. Actually, yeah.
It was a little irregular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a line in the New York Times coverage of this farm bill vote that says, even in a chamber used to acrimony, Thursday's debate in the House was particularly brutal. Democrats repeatedly, as we say in the States, called for roll call votes on parliamentary procedures and motions to adjourn, delaying the final vote by hours and charging Republicans over and over again with callousness and cruelty. Republicans shouted protest, trying to silence the most strident Democrats, and were repeatedly forced to vote to uphold their own parliamentary rulings. So again, I ask the question, Alan, when are these kids going to get along? I mean, we got to get something done, right?
Only when the election cycle proves to one side or the other that they've made some strategic mistakes. You know, it's about winning for them. It's not about doing what's right. And as a result of that, if you come out against Hispanics, if you come out against women, if you come out against people who are poor, you create a backlash. Now, let me put it this way. Will people who really need the help with food stamps come out and punish the Republicans for doing this? Not so clear, I'll tell you right now, because we do know that the poor vote in many elections in far fewer numbers than the Democrats do, than the Republicans do. So they were surprised in this last presidential election. They were surprised by the women's vote. They were surprised by the Hispanic vote. If this serves, and now that we've come up with a really bad solution for student loans, if the kids come out, the poor come out, I think there'll be a reassessment. That's when people will start to get along, Joe.
I do want to. We're going to talk about the student loans in just a few minutes, probably after our news break. But yeah, it does seem to be. We have so many issues that there fails to be any. There is no agreement on, and I'm just wondering at what point. You know, it seems to me we could say at any time, well, all right, we've reached our limit for putting up with this. But instead, it just seems to be the new normal, and we expect it.
Yeah, it is, and it also is one of the reasons why people, Joe and Ray, hate the Congress the way that they do. The Congress has the lowest public approval numbers, I believe, ever. And it is a direct result, Joe, of what you're pointing out here.
So
even lower than the state legislature, which is extraordinary.
So doesn't common sense say, here's an idea. Maybe if we did something, our numbers would go up. Maybe if we talked to each other and didn't scream at each other, our numbers would go up.
Well, you know, as individuals, they do that. So in other words, if you were to go to Congress on the corner in anybody's district, they would all be saying, I reach across the aisle, I sit with a Democrat every once in a while, or I sit with a Republican every once in a while. Because they know as a as an individual running in a district, it's what people want. So they'll say it. The problem is not with the individuals, it's with the leaders. It's why, so for example, in Massachusetts, where I'm sitting at an undisclosed location right now.
In your bunker.
A lot of people didn't vote for Gomez in this last election, who was running for United States Senate, because they knew they would be voting not for Gomez, who they liked, by the way, I think that's clear, but for Mitch McConnell, who is the leader and who is so irate on so many of these things and leading the party. So you have to make up your mind. Can individuals make a difference? Probably not. It's the leadership.
And as the leadership has changed, the overall mood hasn't changed, though. It just changes the weight of one side or the other just changes. I mean, it's not like there's a mood change.
Well, I think it's gotten worse. I don't think there's any question. And we are at a point, you're right, we're at a point where the American people don't like it. The question is what comes out of it. So, for example,
well, that's the part I don't get.
Yeah. Well, it may well be that the Republicans are figuring that the poor will stay home, that Hispanics will stay home, women will stay home, the kids will stay home, and they may be right.
Now,
and therefore,
suggesting, and I just want to make sure that we understand where you're coming from here.
Sure,
Are you suggesting then that the Republican, the primary focus of the Republican Party on Capitol Hill is to hurt the poor and Hispanics and women? Just want to make sure that that's not what you're saying or is what you're saying.
Well, yes and no. The answer is that remember what happens to these people. They're all scared to death that they are going to face a primary from somebody that is further right than they are. And that is what we call the Tea Party. And by the way, it's been happening. So let's say you get a moderate conservative congressman who wants to do the right thing. They go back to their district and some guy's flaming out and yelling and screaming that they're giving away free telephones to everybody or that they're doing this or they're doing that. They're going to lose to that person. We have seen it again and again and again. And so it is not only policy that we're talking about here. It's politics and it's survival.
I would suggest we only have a second left, but it takes two to tango. And a reason that the numbers are so low is not just on one party. It's on both parties because they think, I'm all for cooperation as long as I get my idea across.
I agree. It takes two to tango, absolutely.
And by the way, I agree too. I mean, I do agree. And there are some times when the Democrats go too far. They want to give too much public resources away, according to the middle class in America, and then they get it in the neck.
Well, we're going to take a break. We'll be back after this NPR news break. You're listening to our panel on WAMC Roundtable, WAMC.org. We'd love to hear from you. Coming up next, NPR News, and then we'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel.
Your serve, old boy.
Welcome back to our Roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue. Ray Graff is here. Alan Chartok is on location somewhere.
Or is he?
I'm there.
Oh,
I'm
good.
There.
Oh, okay.
Excellent. Welcome back to our program. And a reminder, you can join us roundtable at WAMC.org. Also, comment on our webpage or our Facebook page or tweet us. We were talking about the Farm Bill a moment ago, and we and through that conversation, Alan mentioned also about student loans and the deal regarding student loans. That has hit a snag. According to CNN, an emerging bipartisan Senate deal to pare back rising student loan rates hit a stumbling block late Thursday when initial cost estimates came in too high. The tentative deal aims to help students with subsidized student loans who face a doubling of interest rates to 6.8%. Lawmakers involved in the talks have said the package needs to be revenue neutral, but the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office concluded the package would cost roughly $22 billion over the next 10 years. Senators are now waiting for a more complete CBO, Congressional Budget Office, mm-hmm. for those of you keeping score at home, to come in before talks continue. Congressional staffers are planning to discuss the matter today while members hope to meet next week. So again, this is another issue that has hit a snag and once again is affecting low-income kids who are trying to go to school. Alan, what do you make?
Exactly. Well, no, I mean, you know, I've been very clear on this over and over again. My parents didn't have a lot of money. I went to Hunter College in the Bronx. It cost not a penny. And I was lucky. I had full scholarships, and I got through. Now, there are a lot of people who cannot afford anything. If you raise the rates at the state university by $200 or $300, there are people who will not be able to have the equality of opportunity that everybody is always talking about. You know, we're not talking about communism here. We are talking about giving everybody a fair break. We send our kids to elementary school, or we send our kids to junior high school, to high school, and we do it, and nobody pays anything. We all shoulder that burden. Now, when you say that a kid in graduate school is going to have to pay up to 8% under this deal that the people don't like because it's costing too much, but it's pegged to, you know, some of the prevailing interest rates, it could go up to like 8.5%, 8% for a graduate student. That means that people who don't have any money are not going to be able to afford this. What I don't think a lot of people understand, Joe and Ray, is that if it's just a couple of $100 at the state university, which is supposed to be accessible, but which is costing a lot of money these days, there will be people who cannot go to school.
Now, you know, the president also in his 2014 budget proposed a plan where it's tied to the 10-year treasury rate. So he's got a market-based plan as well. It's not just the Republicans calling for this.
Ray, you make a good point as always, but let me put it this way. Do I have to agree with the president on everything?
Do you have to agree with anyone on anything?
That's even better.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Over to you, Joe.
All right.
Let's move on.
All right. I wanted to, let's look at the issue. You know, I think there is a...
Let's look at that. I'm sorry, Joe. I don't want to step on you, but do you know what an independent or private college costs these days?
Yes.
I mean, we are talking 60. I know because you helped with some people, but
between 40, 60, yeah, $1,000. I mean,
we're talking about $60,000 a year.
Yes.
Now, don't tell me we don't have segregated schools anymore. And yes, they do let some people in on scholarship. No two ways about it.
Right.
But in the end, we have a segregated system because either you got it. Or you walk, and the more we do that kind of thing, the more we will not have an integrated economically, racially, society, because we know what that does. Therefore, I'm aghast, when we suggest that people have to borrow to go to school. I don't think that's the American way. I'll be honest with you.
But that's a completely huger, more large issue. I mean, obviously, to go to school now, most kids, except for the very privileged, have to borrow. And that's just the way it is.
And it also becomes...
That's true. That's true. In my classes at SUNY, I would regularly say, how many people in this room have a college loan of any kind? And every hand would go up.
Sure.
So, but that doesn't make it... That Ray doesn't make it better. It just tells you where we are. Now, if a kid is going to come out of college, a state university, and owe, you know, $100,000 or $200,000, do you have any idea how long it is to pay that back? They don't
sure
get a fair
I do.
Start.
Yeah, I don't I know all too well, because we're still paying our loans from school. And that's the thing, I think, is that we have this culture where now the parents are often just paying off their loans when they start sending their own kids to school. And it is a cultural thing, so that you really think nothing of it. It becomes monopoly money at some point. It becomes almost there's a detachment between what is real, because it's a lot of it is deferred, a lot of it is later. You pay some now, you pay some then. The parents pay some, the kids pay some, and it's all divided. And they put it into a pretty little package, hand it to you, and say, this is what we can do for you. And you say, okay. And it's not until you look at the cold, hard numbers of what you're paying and what the interest rate is and so forth, of what that college education costs. And yes, I certainly think that we have to look at it at this level and look at it and have the legislature do something. But there also is this very strange culture that we have of not, and I would argue that, you know, we even see this sometimes in automobiles, and whenever we borrow money for something, houses, certainly we saw this with the housing bubble, but there comes a time where you have to look at what you can afford and what the real cost is, because there's such a detachment of what the cost is and what you're actually buying.
We're coming around for the second time here, and I always say that I have no tolerance for it when people call on Vox Pop. But let me come back to an original question that I asked you both before, and that is, what's the difference if we are committed to a quality of opportunity for paying for a kid's high school education so that everybody gets to first base together, or paying for college? What is the difference?
Well, I would suggest to you that it's a great... Your ideal is a great one, but I would suggest that it would kill 60, 70, 80% of private colleges if you're suggesting that everybody gets a free ride.
And I would also...
I suggest that... Yeah,
no, go ahead. No, go ahead with...
No,
Ray.
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen, because there is some elite in this country that create private colleges or independent colleges, and those colleges will always be there. Now, there are marginal private colleges, and what has happened, thanks to Governor Rockefeller, is that we have a great state university, which does a fabulous job of educating people. So not every private college is going to survive, but as far as I'm concerned, if the kid wants to use some of the money that we raise to go to a private school, I have no problem with that. I have no problem with that. But I do think that we've got our heads in the wrong place here in terms of creating a society where everybody gets a chance.
And that's, but I want to get to the point, and I don't, I don't think this is going around the second time. I think it's bringing up a different issue of our culture of buying things that we can't afford, of going for things that it becomes monopoly money, that we say, yes, there is the fairness issue of that college education is too expensive, but we don't think anything about, I mean, how much conversation are we putting into what this debt is and how long we are going to be holding on to it? And at what point do we say, okay, we have a responsibility for that debt and the decades that it's going to take for us to pay it off?
Yeah, I agree with that. On the other hand, I think that in the same way that I believe we should have a healthcare system and pay more in taxes so that we have a healthcare, universal healthcare, so that you have to make up your mind. Who are you? What is it that you believe in? I believe in a healthcare system where everybody just goes to the doctor and we pay for it like every other major industrial society in the world. I believe, as other societies have done, that college should be free. Or that it should be so moderate that that people can afford it, and that it doesn't strangle them for the rest of their lives. And yes, if we have to pay a couple of bucks more in taxes, I'm for it. But I also want to remind both of you of what one nuclear submarine costs in Groton, Connecticut. We're talking about billions of dollars here. So what do we want? More submarines, or do we want everybody having an education? Do we want to have some measure of equality here?
We're going to wrap up this conversation. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back and wrap up our panel for this morning in our final moments. We welcome you to join us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Catskill Mountain Foundation, Hunter, New York, featuring pianist Okotero Fukuma performing the works of Mozart, Brahms, Debussy, and Albéniz, July 20th, 2 p.m., Doctoro Center for the Arts, CatskillMTN.org. Embrace this precious moment, Millerton, New York, a weekend retreat with teachings by Tibetan meditation master His Eminence Shapa Tenzin Rinpoche, author of the book Living Fully, July 20th and 21st, Buddhafield.info, and Spot Coffee, Saratoga Springs, New York, a community-oriented cafe featuring fresh roasted coffee, baked goods, soups, salads, pizza, and more, spotcoffee.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue. Ray Graff is here. Alan Chartok joins us as well. We welcome your input. And I think we have time for one or two more issues. And one of the things, this one's been around for a little while, where we wanted to talk about it, and there was some movement yesterday. So we want to talk about the trial of Whitey Bulger taking place in Boston. Graphic testimony from a forensic anthropologist, including images of decomposing bones and brain matter, continued on Thursday in the federal case against mob boss Whitey Bulger. Dr. Anne Marie Myers, a Massachusetts state forensic anthropologist, showed jurors gruesome photos of human remains found in a shallow grave in the Boston area. Unfortunately, in this trial, at least unfortunate for the jurors who have to deal with with all of this, this came a day after testimony by a former partner of reputed mob boss Whitey Bulger ended dramatically when Kevin Weeks and Bulger, once very, very close, shouted at one another across a federal courtroom, and just a string of expletives, apparently, in the courtroom erupted in some you understand how the two could be accused of
yeah
of the crimes where they were committed. It was
they're no longer BFFs.
No. There's been a falling out, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, Alan, what do you make of this trial? It is it's really something to see this. And obviously, when you have a trial like this that explodes, it is it's quite something.
Well, you know, I'd rather actually hear from Ray on this one than me, because he, you know, well, because you follow criminal justice in a way that I don't always do. But philosophically, it's fascinating to me. I mean, you have a scanner on your desk.
That's true.
So you follow crime.
Yeah.
So here we have these two guys, both of whom have won. How do we know that? They're still alive. They're in their 80s, 85 years old, something like that. At least Bolger is. They've killed a lot of people, 18, 19, probably a lot more than that. And they have gotten away with it. One of them had a brother who was the head of the Massachusetts State Senate, who still, I think, would say he loves his brother. Mm. There was this gang. So Whitey Bulger is a symbolic of the existent underworld in this country. And when you think about the word underworld, you know what it means. It means that there's another whole universe, like in Superman, that is existent, and where people are killing each other and getting away with it, and it doesn't seem to stop, no matter how many times we clean things up in this country. And that, I think, is what's much more important than whether Whitey Bulger gets what he deserves or not. I think it's much more important, the issue of how do we get to the basic fairness of how we run things. If you want to run a store and there's a guy who comes in every week and puts out his hand and says, give me money. Give me money if you don't want somebody killed, and means it. And gets away with it. That's the kind of thing that we have in this country that really is intolerable.
What do you make of Weeks now? Weeks is the key prosecution witness. He was the right-hand man for Whitey Bulger. And he was basically given 5 years in prison for five murders in exchange for being the key witness against Bulger.
You know, Ray, the guy in the Bonanno family, I was just reading about that trial, he's getting out of jail free after committing all of those kinds of murders and being the head of the whole organization. They wanted to get the guys below him, so they go to the chief and they say to the chief, we'll let you out if you testify against the others. And that's the only way criminal justice seems to be able to do its job in this country. And meantime, all these people are dead and nobody's going to have to pay for it. And the guy's going to be supported by the witness protection plan. Unbelievable.
I think there was a just taking a sociological and cultural view of this, but there was a interesting article earlier this week about why we are fascinated with this stuff, which the fact that you have the FBI digging up a field looking for the remains of Jimmy Hoffa, you have the Whitey Bulger trial going on and admitting to 20 murders and bristling at being called a mass murderer. You have The Sopranos back in the news with the death of James Gandolfini. We love this stuff as far as reading
and
about
the great, right. And the greatest movie ever made, The Godfather.
That's right.
Which they finally end where Corleone is sitting in a chair, very unhappy, but an old man. Remember when Michael is sitting there in the Godfather,
right.
the third part, and it's almost as if they made that third one so that everybody would see that, quote, crime doesn't pay and you end up unhappy, which everybody does, I think, anyway. Maybe that's a little too cynical.
Crime doesn't pay, or that everyone ends up unhappy?
No, we know crime can pay, and we know that everybody ends up unhappy.
Okay,
many people do, and people are screaming at their radios. Not me. I have 16 grandchildren. Yeah, okay. I take it back.
Okay.
But let me just say that we do love our heroes in The Godfather. When Michael Corleone makes a fool of the senator, who they have compromised by finding him with a dead prostitute, wasn't that what it was?
That was, yeah.
It makes a fool of him. The audience is basically cheering for Corleone. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the same thing in The Sopranos. I mean, who were you rooting for? Who weren't you? And it's an interesting, again, an interesting cultural question. We got to a lot of issues this morning. We love when you're a part of it. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And a reminder, you can always comment on our webpage. You just go to WAMC.org. It's right there. We have a Facebook page. We have a Twitter page. We have all of this stuff so that you can communicate with us, and we'd love to hear from you.
Organs of social media.
Yes, that's
as it were.
We got a very good thing from Norman Douglas, who says, with reference to discussion on student loans, when you lend the banks at lower than market rates, the stockholders and management benefit. When you lend the students at below market rates, Warren Bill, you are investing in intellectual capital and American benefits. I like America benefits. I like it.
Very nice. Alan, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure.
Have a good weekend there, Chief.
Thank you very much, and have a great weekend, and we'll be back with the roundtable after this short break.